Hey, Lex Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you to death. Man, this is a great one. This is Coach Eric Wolf from LIU. Quite a coaching pedigree. Siena, Harvard on that great staff. And then years at Albany running the offense when the Thompsons were there. I was just fascinated by this coach and probably have developed a man crush on the way he runs his practices. Anyway, I think you're going to find this very, very interesting. There's some good drills in here, but mostly just a five-minute mentality and the planning that goes into these practices I just think is awesome. Anyway, without further ado, Coach Eric Wolf, LIU.
Hey, Let's Coach Mike here, LexCoachMike.com. Today is a really special day, man. We've had like four or five emails just in the last 3 or 4 months. We've got him on, Coach Eric Wolf, in his second year at LIU. Coach, welcome to LexCoachMike.com.
What's up, man? Good energy. I like it.
Yeah, it's all artificial, man. Like I said, this is the radio voice, okay? And as you heard in the bio, guy's got a great pedigree, man. Stints at Siena, then at Harvard, then at Albany, and Team Israel, right?
Yep, bounced around over there a little bit.
That had to be a blast.
Yeah, it was fun, man.
Anyway, Coach, hey, listen, just to get us started here, obviously we've done podcasts. I don't know that I ever did any with Siena, but in some of the places you've been, and one of the things that we've seen evolve over the last 5 or 6 years especially is the coaches playing games with the variations in practice sequence. You know, on the site, we kind of talk about the, with all the respect in the world, obviously, you know, the Massera model, kind of an hour of fundamentals, whatever that looks like, you know, station work, stick work, position work, ladder work, whatever it is, small groups, and then evolving into, you know, some transition, some even, and then the 10v10. Now we're seeing guys start to turn that schedule on its ear. Understanding the differences between a Monday, Tuesday, and a Thursday in season, and the difference between fall and spring. Can you give me a general outline of what happens when you guys come out to practice? Are you an afternoon practice team, a morning practice team? How do you get the guys started? And then do you have a general template that you follow?
Yeah, I do anything in my power to stay away from the mornings. I know there's some coaches that get them up, and I think it's an important part of life, getting up early in the morning. I certainly get up early in the morning, but I think these guys, we prioritize sleep over everything. So unless we're trying to beat a storm and get practice in early, we don't go early in the mornings. Our normal practice times would be Monday, Wednesday, 11:30 to 1:30, and then Tuesday, Thursday, about 1:30 to 3:30 with some flexibility there. But, yeah, we normally start. We also have we got to factor in classes just like everybody else does. We build in treatment time. So, like today, for example, we had an 11:30 practice. So we had a film session where we went about 10 to 10:30. And then from 10:30 to 11:15, that's their treatment time. We give them about 45 minutes. And then we start a pre-practice at about 11 o'clock. So if you're a guy that doesn't need a lot of treatment, going from 10:30 to 11, you can get out there and get a lot of shots in. So I'm not, you know, when guys are coming out, they don't, you know, we're not sprinting. This is like stuff and stick work. We have everybody shoot. So the goalies are warming up. We have an attack cage, a midfield cage, and a defense cage. And we do everything kind of dud speed. But for guys that really want to get after it, if you're out there before pre-practice starts, you're going to get 45 minutes worth of shooting before practice. And then there's no pressure on the guys that need 45 minutes of treatment. They get their treatment done, but they're all required to be there by our warm-up time, which is about 11:30. And then we'll warm up for about 15-minute stretch. Then we'll get into some stick work, and then we'll kind of get our practice going. So we work with the kind of the lag, the wiggle room that's in between treatment, film, and class. We build in a pre-practice there that isn't high intensity, but, you know, guys, they want to get the work in, and if they want to get the work in, they're going to come out there. But everything is – nothing is going to be like one-on-one competitively. It's all kind of dud speed there. But, you know, over the course of a year, if you're getting a half hour of shots in every day before practice, you know, we like those reps.
Coach, are those shooting, are you doing shooting drills in that mostly? And are they more specifically for the attack and the middies? I mean, the guys are kind of in lines of a handful of guys and you know, you've got them driving, rolling back, or a split, or something like that? Is it
organized
in that regard? Or
it is all very basic, just because they haven't stretched. So, and I'm talking to my offensive coordinator, Jim Montana, about it, because you really have to. I feel like you got to hold back. So everything is one pass shot, or you know, light split shot. Defensively, they're throwing right across and 10-yard step downs, and they do it every single day. So we're not. We're just not pushing them. They're not going to catch, split, roll back, come to the middle, run over the top. Like, that's just not what we're looking to do. You know, the attack will nice and tight, finish in front, 5-yard step up. You know, they might do a split and a turn from X coming up up the hash and getting a shot. But we're just trying to make the best use of their time and our time. I'm really big on efficiency, and I hate wasted time. And I really want to value our players' time as well. So that's why we build everything in and explain to them what the expectations are for each phase of it. So I would say it is pretty dull. It is pretty light. There isn't a whole heck of a lot to it, but you are getting quality reps. And it depends on the guys. These guys are 18 and 21. They don't need a whole heck of a lot, so some guys are going full go, and some guys, you know, if they need to be on the side stretching, they are. But it's all contagious. When you see a lot of guys getting out there getting reps, you want to get out there and get reps yourself.
Coach, you have poles shoot too in these drills?
Yeah, absolutely. The DK, they got their own cage kind of in the corner, but yeah, they are shooting. We get them going about 10-yard step downs, and then sometimes we'll get them cutting a little bit, or kind of like a throwback in transition, a 54-43 kind of thought process where they just have one pull pass, a step down and shot. But yeah, they love it. It's better than the, you know, just the over the crosses, overfield passes, and all that kind of that boring stuff. When they shoot, you know, they get excited about it. So it's and we've seen production on game day with the way that we like to push, and it's the first three up. So just trying to be most productive with our time and with their time as we can.
Man, we just got started. I'm loving you already.
No, I appreciate that. It's nice to be loved.
You know, I get guys asking, come watch our practices, because they're all tailored after, you know, different NCAA practices and whatnot. And, you know, going, I can't believe you got poles in your, we'll even put our goalies in our shooting drills occasionally, just to get a right hand, left hand, you know, if it's a roll into a left hand, or instead of maybe having them split, having them walk the dog or something like that. But mostly just to get them left hand touches, especially, you know, about a lot of our listeners, you know, we call one and a half coaches, right? I mean, they got a guy that understands lacrosse, and then they got a social studies teacher with the best intentions. So,
gotcha.
You know, once the goalies are warmed up to a degree, or even warmed up, you know, after this, if we stretch after we do the shooting, which is kind of what, you know, we normally do, yeah, I just don't want them standing there, you know. And how long can you throw, or how much time can you spend throwing 30-yard passes? I mean, gag me with a spoon. We put them in there, let them have some fun, and, you know, I kind of rationalized it in my own head just by the fact that, you know, they're getting right-hand, left-hand touches, and at least just out there seeing the ball and moving. Again, not at a rapid speed.
Yep, gotcha.
So what comes next, Coach? We go
in the practice plan?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the day. I think
are you going to a stretch next, or like a dynamic stretch?
Yeah, so we'll get our warm-up going there. We take 15 minutes where the guys will be stretching, warming up, and, you know, pretty much the standard stuff. And then they bring it up on me, and I just kind of give them a couple touch points for the day, what we're focused on. I keep it pretty brief. And then we will pass it to one of the players for what we call the player's address, which it's basically one guy has it per day. He gives a quote, or, you know, a song lyric, or anything he wants to talk about, a message that he feels is applicable to him, and he feels like it's applicable to our team. And then they break it down to each other, just because I think when you speak as a coach, it is powerful, but when it comes from their teammates, I think it's 50 times more powerful. So every day somebody goes up there and gets us going for practice, and then we break out and we get into our stick work. And then the next day, that kid who just went on the address, he's got to pass it to somebody else, the next guy. So it works on public speaking, and it gets the guys just a little different view for each other, because not, you know, a freshman, you know, if you're not telling him to go up there and speak, he's not speaking, but we force them to. So I think it's been a pretty cool thing that we do, just giving the guys the floor there. And then I am still cognizant of getting their legs going, so they've been out there for about, you know, 15 minutes to a half hour for pre-practice shooting, and they got 15 minutes of warming up, and then we'll do about, I would say about 20 to 25 minutes, 5, 10, 15. Yeah, 25, 15 minutes of stick work, and then we'll split. We'll get into deep defensemen working on clearing, and offensive guys, they'll get a 10-minute full-speed shooting segment, and then we get into it in play. But we'll also mix up, once they're stretched, like a man-up, man-down, a best-of-one, a six-on-six best-of-one, and overtime, just quick scrimmage just to throw them off. I do that a lot. Like, I'm really kind of anal about my practice plans and how going according to it, but I also build in some lag time there because I kind of like to shock the system and give these guys stuff that isn't going according to plan, just because that's what happens in a game. You never know when there's going to be a man up, man down, or something like that. But for us, I know what our team responds to, and above all else, it's just competition. Our guys like getting after each other, so I try and feed them as much as we can, and that's something not that we struggle with, but that we've acknowledged we have to do better with our mental focus and the stick work portion of things and the clearing portion of things, and not just when there's something on the line in the competition.
I love it. And you start to get the juices flowing, man. You want to set the tone right away.
No doubt.
Okay, so maybe we did are you running like a full field game to one there?
Yeah, so like today we did, I got a 5-minute stick work drill. But that's something that I've kind of evolved in my past. From coaching too, I just keep it really quick clips. Like we have two stick work drills in a 5-minute segment. So one's going for 2:30, the next one's going for 2:30, and then the next stick work's going for 5. The next stick work's going for 2:30, and that's within a 5-minute block. And then we split and go into a 10-minute shooting and clearing segment. Anything 10 minutes out here is a lifetime. So we really try and keep things quick to 5-minute clips because we just feel the flow of the game too. It is a game of runs, highs and lows. So, we try and keep things pretty quick there with the 5-minute change. And then in between drills, we got the shot clock going. The next drill has to be started, depending on how quickly we want to practice. There could be an 80-second shot clock going in between drills. Could be a 60, could be a 50, a 40 if we really want to work on our conditioning and getting to the next phase. And that's something that I've always done even before the shot clock, is just having these guys. I used to do it on the game clock where you'd have a 10-minute drill, and then they got, 60 seconds to get to the next drill. Just keeps urgency and efficiency within practice. So stick work, shooting, clearing, and then we get after it, on a Monday, Tuesday. We're looking at one-on-one, twos, threes, fours, just getting after each other and challenging each other. And then we kind of get into some more six-on-six stuff, and then as we evolve, we'll throw in some transition ground ball drill in there. But, we try and keep it pretty quick, and practice is never going to go longer than 2 hours. We really try and be playing for about an hour and a half, but the time they're out there with pre-practice and stretching, it's probably closer to 2 hours.
Right. Coach, we've talked to a lot of coaches, man. I see a lot of guys down at the 5 to 7 minutes for some of the drills. A lot of guys in the 7 to 8 or 9, and then, we still have guys that are running 12-minute drills, not necessarily 4v4 or 6v6 for a half hour the way it was done many years ago. I haven't talked to anybody that was as short as an organized 5-minute clip than with an 80 or 60-second shot clock between drills. I would imagine the players just love it.
Yeah, they love it. And with the millennials, like, these guys are really big on beginning and end and time and something hanging over them. I think for whatever reason, just really connects with them. I don't, the phones, the technology, whatever, but, we feed into that. And I think the guys feed off of it.
I think you have to feed into it, man. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they, I've been doing the time stuff, as long as I can remember as an assistant coach. It's just as I've become a head coach, I've just really shortened up the duration of what we're doing just because of the focus. If they don't have time to think, then they have to be focused. And if you have guys engaged, if you got guys standing around, I think guys, tend to wander, and that's when, their guard starts to drop. We just talk about all the time, our hands have always got to be up, ready to get hit, and ready to hit somebody else, metaphorically speaking.
Wow, metaphorically, from a coach, 11, that's a pretty good word, man. I'm so proud of you.
I got an 11-10 in my SAT. It's really not a big deal. I needed a tutor, but I got it up. I got into Albany. It was great.
I got 11-10 after my third time.
That's good, man. Persistence is important. It's a big part of life.
Hey, I didn't ask you a question. Are you a share the practice playing guy or not share the practice playing guy?
I post it every day for the guys. But you know, some days I'll go off and I'll usually try and throw one or two, three wrinkles in there that they aren't ready for. Whatever I have up there, doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's to be. I like to stick to it as best I can because we make sure we get stuff in, but I'm not
right.
opposed to changing it up or throwing something in there. I usually build in, like, if I got a drill 11:45, it's a 5-minute drill, and then, you know, three drills later, you know, I'll have built in almost 15 minutes of wiggle room so that if we wanted to throw in a man up, man down, if we were feeling that practice was getting a little, you know, the energy was low, that we throw in a competition or something like that. So I build in wiggle room for myself and our staff to throw in some more competitive stuff just because we know what gets us going, and it's competing and it's fighting and it's playing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the point for the coaches that are all sitting there going, this all sounds pretty good. Behind the scenes now, if you're going to run 5-minute segments and keep it changed up and different, keep the millennial mindset engaged every day in practice, all of a sudden practice planning takes on a whole new importance, right?
Yeah, I mean, I spend, I don't know how much.
I mean, you got to be like uber organized. And
yeah, it's pretty organized. I do it all through like Excel or Google Form. I don't even know what I have it on. But, you know, it is, I spend a lot of time doing it. I'll, you know, watch the practice. And you have a shell that you look at on your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know what you're doing on a Thursday, Friday in terms of substituting and clearing and getting the little things in. You know, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is the heavy lifting stuff, and then we start to pull back a little bit Thursday, Friday. But, yeah, I mean, I usually go through 3 or 4 drafts before it is really locked in. So I usually have something that in my head at night after I watch the film. I come in, I get in here early in the morning. I get a shell down, put a couple things in. When my assistants get here, we meet as a staff very quickly, see if they want anything in the practice, and then we'll tweak it, put it in, and then we'll post it up for the boys, you know, well before they get down here for practice. I've played with it before where you do it the night before, you send it out to them, you get them thinking about it. But I just, I'm really big on sleeping on stuff because I usually feel differently in the morning. But yeah, it is uber organized, but, it doesn't take a lot of hands. We really empower our guys and, you know, you always got a couple injured guys like, hey, you got this, and this. Everybody's got a job. Like, so we map out every drill. Hey, during this, you got the balls, you got the cones, pick it up, move it, you know, next spot. Everybody has a job, you know, in terms of setting practice, like the attack cage, the pre-practice, the goalie cage, the defense cage, the midi cage. Every day somebody has, and it doesn't change, they know that that's their job, setting a practice, our targets, our cones, lining the field with the cones for the offense, cones for the defense, balls for the defense when they're shooting pre-practice, and then we have balls for shooting, you know, during the actual practice. So it's all really well thought out and mapped ahead for efficiency. So we have as few moving parts as possible.
Man, I love it. I love it. I have never done that before. Do you play some team games with that coach? I mean, moving the cages and the cones, is that done by position? You mix up freshmen and seniors? Attack and pulls.
I don't trying to build
a little bit of team networking in the same deal.
Yeah, I don't really do anything by class in terms of being able to build a system. I think that hierarchy is tough. You know, certainly there's things that, you know, guys will do in terms of seniors and leadership, but we really do it more so by position, and then I'll just do it randomly, put guys together. So, you know, our attack has the attack cage for pre-practice, the goalies and the defense have their cage, the middies have their cage, and they know what their responsibilities are. It's really important to just lay out expectations. Hey, this is what we want you to do, this is how you do it, and this is why. The why for millennials is huge, that these guys understand. If they know why they're doing it, they're going to be a lot more invested in it, as opposed to the old school thought of, come here, son, you're going to do this because I'm telling you to do it because I've been doing it for 30 years. And people are going to get really turned off by that in my experience. It's important that these guys know why they're doing it, and then you tell them exactly how to do it, and then you empower them to make suggestions about how they can do it better. And then if you enforce those, you know, some of the suggestions that they have, then they get really into it. It's like, wow, this guy actually cares what I'm talking about, and they actually put it into action, then that will start spreading like wildfire and guys start speaking up. Now you got to be able to, you know, everybody, you don't even want so many cooks in the kitchen, but it's important that you have that environment that guys feel like they can you know, give you their opinions and that their opinions are valued.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's, you know, in my line of work, Coach, it's really kind of crazy. I'm in front of big corporate audiences, mostly C-suite guys for the last 20 years, and I don't think they have a clue, you know, how to engage younger employees compared to college coaches modifying the way they practice, keep the players engaged. And I mean, yeah, that in a very macro sense, you know, I mean, including all kinds of stuff in there. But, yeah, I've asked a lot of coaches over the years, maybe not as much in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, is this like, you know, trial and error, or a gut feel, something you had. But, you know, on the website, we're real big on changing the drills up day to day to keep the players engaged, keeping the pace of the drills down in the 7 to 8 minute range, or even down to the 5 minute range in your case, and explaining why. You know, if I knew you better, I would tell you, man. In 160 hours of podcast, we only had one coach ever tell us that the players don't need to know why. I'll tell you when we're off the air later, man. Remind me.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, I think it's very intuitive, you know, of the coaches to get the players engaged and therefore, you know, helping to put them in the best position they can possibly be to be successful, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Hey, let's go back to Mondays and Tuesdays, man. So we the ones, the twos, and the threes, interesting question, right? Debate question. Do you do those in progression, typically, Coach, or will you bounce that around? We're going to do ones, now we're going to do fours, now we're going to do twos, now we're going to do threes.
Yeah.
We have coaches talk from both camps. You know, one is going back to what you said before. You know, the game is so fluid, man, and even more fluid this year, right? That, you know, not allowing them to go in a progression. Same thing with transition drills, you know what I mean? 7 or 8 years ago when we started, it was 3v2, 4v3, 5v4. Man, we rarely hear that now. I mean, there's like 5 or 6 coaches that stay with the progression. But generally speaking, you know, they're trying to match the flexibility of the fluidness of the game.
Yeah, I think it depends on the day. Like a day for us today, we've been doing, we bring them in on Sunday. Saturday we have our game. Sunday we get them up around 1 o'clock, and we'll go over, we'll do like a stretch, we'll do all the film, and then we'll do like a lift. Actually that order's not right. We'll stretch, we'll roll, we'll lift, and then we'll finish, they'll shower, get a little something to eat, and then we'll bang on our film, and then we give them off on Monday. Today was President's Day, so we use Monday, just because for us, getting all the film in on Monday with all the class schedules is just not, it's just not possible for us. So I'm a big believer in rest and recovery as well. So I really like to, we'll get them up on Sunday, but we're not going to play. And then they get two full days recovery. So Sunday and Monday. Today, you know, we had pretty light work on Saturday. We only had, you know, our starters only played about a quarter and a half. So, you know, we gave them off on Sunday and then we're getting after it today. But, anyway, back to the original question with the ones, twos, and threes. Today we did, you know, 1-on-1 for 5 minutes. Then we did 2-on-2 for 5 minutes. Then we did 3-on-3 for 5 minutes. After each segment, you know, they bring it up on their coach. And then we would flip it a little bit, and we ran it back again, just having our middies playing, you know, both sides of the ball. And that was pretty much our practice today. So we had about 5, 10, 15, 25 minutes of stick work. Ones, twos, threes, ones, twos, threes. And then we put up a couple man-up, man-down challenges, a couple 6-on-6 challenges. We scrimmaged, we put our first team, we put them down, 3 goals with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they played out the scrimmage, and then they forced overtime and they won it in overtime. So that was kind of our, I guess, evolution of the day. But we've done the other stuff, the ones, the twos and threes and the fours where, you know, you're in the same drill, it's a 1-on-1, then you build up 2-on-2, build up 3-on-3, build up 4-on-4. We've done that stuff, but today we took the approach of let's do one thing and do it really well. Kind of the good to great, book, back in the day. Just focusing on one thing at a time, and then just getting it down with muscle memory.
Coach, when you went through the basic skeleton before, when you talked about doing the 1v2s and then the 4s and maybe some 6v6, oh, that's an interesting question too. I'll come back to in a second. Just hearing you speak for, you know, whatever it's been, 20 minutes or so, I kind of expected more transition drills to be plopped in the first hour and 10 minutes of the practice.
Yep. Depends
how much
on the
time
day.
Are you spending in, How much time are you spending in pure transition?
It really depends on the day. We do a lot in the fall with transition, just getting them with the mindset of getting up and down. So every day in the fall and most of the spring, we would do this drill, 54 ground balls. I got from Coach DeLuca when we were at Harvard together. But it's a 54 ground ball drill, and then those guys can get up and down, going the full field.
That was an amazing coaching staff you guys had for that year or two at Harvard.
Yeah.
We had Logic and DeLuca. Who else was on there? There was one other.
We had Joe Nardella there and Noah Fosner, who ended up with Coach DeLuca over at Delaware. Yeah, we had some interesting brains on that staff for sure.
Yeah.
But
so not as much transition in season? I mean, it kind of surprises me because, you know, looking at last year's stats, I still see you at 40 shots a game, you know, pre-shot clock. And the program itself has been an up-and-down program. With you being there, it's been even probably more of an emphasis on an up-and-down program.
They're built within. So like a lot of our fall and a lot of our spring, you see a lot of transition so that we build the mindset of not being afraid to go over the line, and pushing it. And what, you know, that'll bring is that brings the potential for a lot of turnover. So at this point, we know who we are with transition, and we work on it. So the 54 ground ball drill, you're going to see that, you know, at least probably 3 out of 5 days, a week, it's going to be there. And then
Coach,
the other
just describe
thing
that to me. I think I know what that is. Are you talking about rolling the ball out to the midfield wings?
No, a little bit different. It starts so you're starting on one end. You know, five offensive guys, four defensive guys in. They got to stay tight within the hashes, within the box, and then at the other end, you move the goal up to the restraining line. So you know, it'll be about 3 balls per group. We'll keep score. You know, offense put a ball in the back of the net. It's a goal. If the defense clears it over the midline, it's a goal. And if they score, it's another goal for them. So it's competitive to the opposite restraining line. And then as soon as they cross the midfield line, next group comes in, and we run that back both ways. So I do that for about 5 minutes, 2:30 segment, a 2:30 segment, and then it's competitive. So losers run during that. So that gets our guys just going up and down the field. And then when we do our six-on-six.
That's 5v4 at both ends?
No, 5v4 one end, and then there's a goalie with a crease at the opposite restraining line. So you
at
move that cage
line,
up.
Right?
Yeah, so you move that cage up, and then everybody goes over there. Like, there's no midfield line. So if the defense gets it, they got to get upfield. They're playing a man down, and they got to put the ball in the back of the net to get a goal.
They play 4v5 coming back.
Yeah, so it's just a race up the field to see if you get a GB, head man it, and those guys got to bust their butt getting back. So it's not really like, you know, 4v3, 5v4, 6v5 stuff. It's kind of playing within a scramble situation.
But it's got a nice conditioning element in it, too.
Oh, yeah, it's tiring. I mean, I remember when Coach DeLuca was saying those guys doing it at Cornell, it was like they had 50
minutes. Coach DeLuca never shared that with me when he was at Cornell, man. He was holding out on me.
Maybe he got it at Duke. I don't know where he picked it up, but, yeah, it's a pretty good drill. But, and then,
you got a fancy name for it?
54 GBs.
Oh, man. I love interviewing NCAA coaches. 10 years I've been doing this, but you guys suck at naming drills.
It's all about what you do. It's not the pretty, sexy name stuff, man. It's what the drill becomes. 54 GBs is just, it's a lunch pail kind of drill, and you got to get up and down, and the kids, you know, if they compete, they'll have fun with it, but there's some other transition stuff we do.
I'm just kidding. That's why you're coaching at LIU, and I'm like running travel teams and middle school clinics in Georgia. That's exactly the reason. Because I got sexy names. I can't remember what they are, but I got them.
I don't put too much time into the name stuff. To me, it is just, it's all substance. It's what you're doing on the day-to-day basis. And to me, transition more so than anything is a mindset. Being fearless and being able to allow your kids to go for it and not scream at them when they turn it over, because then they're less likely to do it again. But we do a lot of it in the fall, and, you know, 54 GBs, you'll see that pretty steadily. And then our 6-on-6 stuff, there's always transition built in it. We do like a half-and-half drill where it'll be 6-on-6 one end. They got to transition the other way, play defense, blow it dead. And then as soon as those guys cross the midfield line, dropping back to play D, then the next 6-on-6 will start behind them. So every time we do it 6-on-6, you're going to transition the other way. So it's never 6-on-6 dead. Right. It's 6-on-6 leading into transition. So really, I guess I'm not even mindful of it, that it's just built within our practice. It's just a part of who we are, that you're, everything will lead to something else, going up and out the other way.
Hey, Coach, you mind if I go backwards for a second?
Yep.
Yeah, of course you mind, but you're being nice to me because this is the first time we've had you on. When we talked about the 1v1s, the 2v2s, the 3v3s, the 4v4s, over the last 2 or 3 years, probably seen maybe 10%, 15%, not a huge percentage, but legitimate, coaches starting to integrate 5v5s into that. Not necessarily a 5v5 off a off a substitution, just doing 5v5 work. For a myriad, obviously, you know, if we get in a sub situation and we got a look we like to go to for 5v5 where we're going to bang it behind and bring it back out, any of those kind of things, you know, would apply. Are you doing anything with 5v5s?
Give me one sec. Can you give me one sec, Mike?
Sure.
Thanks, man. Sorry, man. Back at you here.
No, all good.
What was the question?
Over the last couple of years, we've seen guys start to integrate 5v5 work in, too.
Yeah.
And I think the reason, you know, kind of started with the substitution game, but then kind of evolved into trying to accomplish the similar things that they get, you know, in their 4v4s, even above and beyond running the Ys or whatever it turns out to be. With a 4v4, sometimes it's hard to get the second or third slide, you know, and,
yep.
And if they're trying to open up the field and they go 5v5s, at least the defense has what I would call a fair chance at maybe getting the second or third slide.
Yeah, and I totally get that. We did a lot of 5v5 stuff when I was at Albany. We did a bunch of it when I was at Harvard as well. Now with the shot clock, I don't think it comes into play as much unless you're playing substitution games.
Yeah, you're right.
We do train our guys a lot to play two ways. So, you know, if we're only running one offensive guy off, our pole's coming on, and we're going to be playing defensively 6-on-5. So we're not a victim to 5-on-5. Going from offense to defense. And then offensively, we really like our 6 offensive guys. And I just think going from D to O, playing those substitution games, you know, unless you practice it a lot, you know, I just don't know how much value, if there isn't as much value as there used to be, because you could take your sweet time and really manipulate the subbing game. Now, you still can in the face-off, because if you're going forward and it's 80, you know, you almost have 40 seconds where you can play
right.
with it. But going from defense to offense now, I just don't think there's as much time. Now, people still might do it, and it might be a part of who they are. They need to manipulate it to be able to attack. And obviously, playing 5-on-5 and 4-on-4, there's a lot more space, and that's great. But just given the new rules with the shot clock, and I think you're going to see the clearing percentages are going to be at least a 5 to 10 year low. Just with people riding and getting over in 20 seconds is a lot harder. I don't know how much time you want to spend doing that in your practice. Everything we do in our practice is calculated to what happens in a game. Whatever happens the most in a game is what we do the most in practice. And to me, that's obviously stick work, ground balls, shooting, and 6-on-6 work more than anything. That's the highest percentage of what happens in a game.
Yeah, it's funny. My head is spinning here listening to you. I think I always felt that way about 4v4 to a degree. You know, I mean, as a coach and, you know, 42 years as head coach, just 4v4s to me are boring. You know, I mean, I understand the value, and I understand, you know, the old timers with the Y up front and then two guys behind and putting guys where they would be in the set and playing 4v4. I just don't know how much that emulates today's game. You know, for a myriad of reasons. I mean, do you like that word, myriad? I'm coming at you, man.
That was nice. You said you got 11-10, and that was also impressive.
Yeah, well, yeah. Actually, I misspelled it somewhere along the line, I think, is what really happened.
Take what you can get, man.
Yeah, and I think the 5v5s was also, if this is fair, an element that coaches were throwing in to, and again, the coaches that are doing it, not so much, you know, about the substitution game as trying to give the guys a different look and have them react to a different scenario, going back to the fluid nature of the game and giving them things they don't often see or don't often expect, and trying to increase the communication and have them adjust to it, if that's fair.
Yeah, I think everyone is different. It all depends on what you're going to see and what works for your program. For us and the way we run it, you know, defensively, we're not going to see a lot of five-on-fives because, you know, we run one offensive guy off the field. We're not in any substitution pattern-like stuff because we leave our guys on. So we're not a
victim. Well, it's one of the, you know, we got cardinal rules on the website, you know, that we publish after all these years. You know, one is short duration of the drills. The other is 200 touches in the first hour, non-negotiable. And one of them is every drill needs to emulate a game situation, you know. And
yeah.
I find myself, you know, for years doing what we used to call, you know, the Syracuse star drill. The guys are all packed inside. Guys would pop out, you know, and you could do it catch right, throw left, a split. I mean, there are a lot of things you could do with that drill, get a lot of touches in a short period of time. But, you know, I quit doing them, not because I don't see the value in them, but just because it didn't emulate a game situation. And pretty soon, you got a millennial going, why are we doing this, man? You know?
Yep.
And you got to be able to answer that question. And obviously, spend time on the practice plan. You can answer the question. Just answer it.
Yeah, and you do. And I don't want to make it seem like we are bending to these guys. We tell them as well, like, listen, there's going to be times in your life where you have to do things that you don't want to do. But we also explain to them why we're doing it. So for us, you know, we don't skip on our stick work. We're going to get, I mean, I'll look at my practice from today. You had a half hour of pre-practice. So that's 30 minutes, 35, 40, 45. Reality, we had 60 minutes of stick work today before we got into anything.
Yeah. Do you ever track touches, Coach?
Say it again.
Do you ever track touches?
I mean, I don't have anyone that's willing to do it in terms of actually seeing how much we got. What we do, we started doing this spring. We got a guy up in the box, you know, who's running the game clock.
Right.
All our shots on cage during our shooting session. So we have that one segment during practice, which is a 10-minute block. Every shot on cage, you know, is a goal for us. Every shot off cage is a goal for the guest. And then after each shooting drill, somebody right there will just calculate the percentage. So we're just really emphasizing shots on cage, which I think are really important now, similar to hockey, just not throwing the puck at the net, but it's really important now to get shots on cage for resets, for rebounds, for late clock scenarios.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
We actually, we stat that within practice, and the kid right there just, you know, if you got, all right, we had 65 on the net, we had 5 off, we're going to stat it. Announce it, and, you know, we don't record it, but the kids are cognizant of it. They're mindful of how many times, you know, the ball is getting on cage. And then they also see when we're taking 5-yard step downs, what our percentage is. And then when we're taking, you know, 10-yard shots on the run, what our percentage is, because it dipped by almost 20-30%. So it really helped kind of back us up and emphasize the fact that we want to get, you know, in the paint to the rack to get our percentage up.
Wow. Sorry, man, I'm writing.
It's a simple concept. The closer you are to the cage, the easier it is.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can scream at kids till you're green in the face and tell them this, and it's got to be on cage, it's got to be that. You know, sometimes you got to lead the horse to water, right? And by letting them establish what the percentages are and then sharing the percentages with them, I just think is a brilliant way to get them to think more along the lines for all the reasons you mentioned before, even more important in today's game, college game.
Yeah, it's the same concept with the millennials. It's just the data. They can see it. It's right in front of them, and you can't argue it because they did it.
Awesome, man. Coach, I'm looking at last year's shots on cage at about 621. Are you comfortable with that, or what are you shooting for?
What, was 62 last year on cage?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I don't have a hard number yet. I really don't. I don't know. I've seen people talk about 40 shots a game, 45 shots a game. I am really big on shots on goal and shot percentage. If we as a team are, if we're at 40% shooting, I think we're going to be pretty hard to stop. It's probably a little more realistic to be between, you know, 30 and 35. 35, right. You're also doing pretty well. shots on cage. You know, I think we'd like to see that get up above 65%, closer to 70. I think if we're at 70 on cage, I think we're going to be pretty good. Just with the value of getting a reset and getting a shot and a rebound now is just so valuable.
Crazy you said that, man, because I have an elliptical in my house, you know, and an Apple TV. So, you know, since the, the Towson Hopkins game last week, you know, the last 4 or 5 days, I've been watching games on the elliptical, you know. And
yep.
It's crazy the amount of times that the referees are meeting to make sure that it hit the goalie or was on cage or wasn't. You know, this morning
yep.
I was watching Albany-Syracuse, and it was like 3 times in the first quarter where one guy, you know, spun his finger in the air and said, reset the shot clock. And the R on the game, you know, blew the whistle and came down and talked to him. The three officials met, decided it was not theoretically a shot on goal.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And like everything new, it takes a while for the refs to
work. Yeah, it'll
take I'm not being negative or sarcastic or anything. I'm just saying it's an interesting element that you never saw in the game before, you know.
Yep. No, listen, I think I'm a big fan of the way the game's going with the rules and the clock and just efficiency and making the game much more fan-friendly for the average TV viewer who tunes in and watch it, like, oh, I get it, as opposed to having to have our game explained, you know, from front to back every single time it's on television. Now it's pretty obvious for, you know, for the average fan who tunes in, which is something that I think is great for the game if we are going to grow it to where we all want it to be.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, man, just watching, you know, now that I can watch the replays, you know, on ESPN Watch and stuff, just watching the replays when I'm working out, it's crazy. How much more exciting it is. I mean, every team, you know. I mean, it's hard to get more exciting than Albany-Syracuse, but, man, it's more up and down than it's ever been. I just think it's terrific, you know.
Yeah, it's different. Every coach plays it differently. You'll see a lot of different approaches. Guys, you know, pack it in. Guys stretch it out. Guys slide and recover to you know. I think that you can slide and recover. You can actually rest your legs a little bit because you can slide, recover, and contain as opposed to one kid having to play really – a lot of pressure on him, you know, with
good
on-ball
point.
Defense, or you can pack
good
it in
point.
The zone and let your guys rest a little bit. So it's to each his own, man. Everybody can cat a thousand different ways, and, you know, it's
Coach,
whatever works for your group.
Let me ask you a question. How much of an adjustment was the 10-yard box?
None for us. I would say none.
Okay.
I think it has an impact, but it doesn't affect us with what we're doing just because we're not subbing people, you know, off the field, going from offense to defense.
Well, and that's kind of the whole point, right?
Yeah, but I mean, we do run one off. I mean, listen, we used to run one off.
No. I get that. But I'm just saying, I was just curious because I thought when they, you know, made the box longer, it definitely slowed things down. I mean, you know, D. Middies could go down there and drink coffee waiting for the guy to come down the field.
Yeah, it did. And I remember I was an advocate for making it bigger because I thought it would give you more transition because you get out the front, but it was the complete opposite. So there's no doubt that having the box smaller gives you more transition opportunities just because there's less ground. There's more ground to make up. If you're sending three guys up and they're sending two off, you're going to be in trouble.
Hey, man. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the stats from last year, 40 shots a game, solid as a rock. The one that kind of really caught my eye, though, was the and I'm not looking for proprietary stuff here, Coach, maybe just an idea on how you practice. And incidentally, on the site, you know, we're huge proponents of not running man up, man down at the end of practice the way a lot of high school coaches did it when they were in high school 30 million years ago. You know, integrating man up, man down, even into transition drills, even into 6v6, full field. All right, man, we're going to go a minute, man up, man down. We're going to go 30 seconds, man. Once you have it in and it's established and all that kind of stuff. But I'm looking at the man up conversion percentage last year at 370. I want to say the NCAA average was like 28 or 29. Can you talk just a little bit about how you're practicing and working on man up and what do you think is contributing to that strong percentage?
Yeah, I mean, I think our numbers.
I did my research for this call, man. Are you proud of me?
I mean, that's great. I mean, I didn't know those numbers, so. I just at least haven't looked at them from last year for a while. Our man up numbers will be significantly better just because, no disrespect to my guys from last year. We're just more talented on offense this year. But I go back to my days at Albany. We had one man up. We ran one man up for 3 years. It was a 1-3-2 to a 3-3, And when you have the right pieces, you don't have to fool anybody. You guys know how to play. And that's what we do here. We have one man up. We have one formation change, or maybe it's two formation changes, but you know, there isn't a whole heck of a lot to it when you have the right pieces. We don't try and trick people. We don't try and fool people. And what that leads to our guys is extreme confidence because there is no thinking. They know exactly what to do, within our stuff when people are playing them, you know, boxing one, when people are playing a five man, when people are pressing out, when people are shutting. We have a rhythm to what we do and they know. And then we don't need a lot of time to prepare for our man up. So then throughout the week, you know, I usually do 2 to 3 a day. So if you do that, you know, you're looking at almost 12 to 15 man ups of game-like reps, and we'll do them full field as well. So those guys got to clear it. They got to go to the other end. If they get a stop, it's a 6-on-6, then they got to get a stop. And then, obviously there is a time and segment where you need to have your scout stuff in for to prepare
right.
for the other team. But,
right.
you know, man up doesn't happen like that. It's not a 10-minute block in a game. It is random. There might be none of them. There might be a lot of them. But you never know when they're going to come. So that's why I don't put it on the practice plan. They need to – and we try and adjust it so that there isn't a lot of, you know, guys changing jerseys. I kind of map it out in my mind, or I'll mark it down with pen in my practice plan where we're going to put the man up, man down. But, yeah, for me it's simplicity. Man up and man and down to me is more than anything is Jimmy and Joe's as opposed to X's and O's. You got to have guys that know how to play together. You coach them up, you teach them up what you want to do. Man down, obviously staying tight, giving up the outside shots, and man up, working for really high quality looks. And our guys do a great job of that. And again, we ran one man up, at Albany for 3 years. It's very different when you have Lyle Thompson running the point, and Ty and Miles and all those great players that we have. But we feel like we're in a pretty similar situation here, and that all our pieces fit really well into the schemes that we put them in. And we also prepare, you know, our next righty, our next lefty. We'll do that as well, like put fouls on different guys. The next guy's got to go in and go up. So we try and keep it as game-like as we can. So not a whole heck of a lot of time in the practice block until you're looking at scout prep.
Yeah, I think I mentioned to you, and we were talking last week, setting up the call, you know, on the travel team circuit. I think I coached against Burnham and the boys 4 times or 5 times, and I was telling you, back, I can remember Lyle facing off back in those days. So.
Yep.
Good players, man, and good coach, and just in love with Albany up one side and down the other.
I mean, listen, man, part of being a good coach is allowing your players to make plays and kind of checking your ego at the door and understanding that those guys might have a different way or a better way of doing it. And that's my time. And people always ask me, what was it like coaching those guys? Yeah, I learned more from them than they ever learned from me. And it's not even comparable or close. So I'm still learning and evolving from my time with those guys. And I love watching them, you know, in boxing, the outdoor stuff and the world games. They really changed my whole approach to everything and being able to let go and, you know, not be as strict on the offensive side of things. I'm an emotional cat anyway, so it's probably better that I gave up the offense anyway, just because I kind of go up and down a little bit. But, you know, when I was at Siena, I was very strict. When I was at Albany, probably a little less, but still very strict. Harvard, kind of in between, and now, you know, I gave up the offense when I got here. The first thing I do, I gave it to my assistant, Jimmy Montana. I got an offensive coordinator, a defense coordinator. I know high school level, you don't always have, you know, full-time guys that are there all the time, but for me, being able to manage and run practice efficiently was really important for me and for those guys to connect with their coordinators, because the relationship with the head coach is different than it is with the assistants.
Well, and I think one of the things that comes with age, allow me to be an old man prophesying here. I think one of the things that comes with old age is you start to realize the, and again, you know, maybe I'm being sarcastic, the overvalue on game day coaching. You know, Bill Tierney said in a podcast to me one time, he goes, you know, Saturdays is the day I coach the least.
Oh, it's 100%. 100%.
And, you know, I think when you get older, you know, two things you learn are number, and the first one I learned from Sheehan at Le Moyne. You know, he taught me at this level, you can't, the level, you know, where we are, and we got good players in Georgia, man, but the level where we are is, you know, you don't predispose exactly what your offense is going to look like I think he told me one time, I won't know what it's going to look like till November. You know, I mean, you figure out where your strengths and weaknesses are in players, and you put your players in a position to be successful versus running the offense that you ran 3 years ago and you were in a state championship. I mean, you know, it changes all the time based on the players that you have. But I think the other thing is players got to make plays. You know, and I've been blessed. I don't know, I probably coached like 24 championship games or something and probably won 16 or 17, probably had the best team four times. At the end of the day, you know, I can remember standing on the sidelines watching great players not play to their potential, or we shut them down the first time, or we shut off the guy and he got through a temper tantrum or got moody, or, you know, he dropped the pass or the goalie made a great save, so then he kind of went in the shell. I mean, so many times I've stood there on the sidelines going, man, when I watched this guy on film, he was unbelievable. In this game, he's very average because of his attitude. You know, I mean, players got to make plays. And the play could be a ground ball out of a scrum. You know, the play could be finding the defenseman open in the corner, you know, to begin a clear. I mean, it's not always a great, great goal. And you need all your players. You know, there's not role players and stars. Every player, you know, has to feel like they can play. Jancic at Gettysburg has a neat phrase for that, coach. He calls it fail forward.
Yep.
He's got a big
yep.
poster in the locker room, you know, fail forward, especially, you know, for transition-based teams or guys who like to get it up and down. You know, do your thing, man. Just go do your thing.
Yeah, I've heard that term before. It's great.
You know, and then coaches got to learn, too. If you're going to encourage your guys to go up and down, you can't scream at them every time they give up a ball and transition goes back the other way. You know,
yeah,
I'm not saying you live and die by the sword, but you can't have it both ways, man. I mean, give your kids some latitude to do what they can do, and then, you know, when they come off, maybe you talk to them, maybe you hug them, maybe you kiss them. I mean, whatever it is, but, you know, once you're going to play this style, it doesn't always go your way, you know?
Yeah, we talk to our guys, and again, we talk about the power coming from them. Physical mistakes, dropping the ball, not hitting the cage, you know, forgetting the slide. Any physical mistake, you need encouragement from your teammates. Pick them up. Let's get the next one. Next one. You got it. Let's go. You got it. Whereas a mental mistake, you know, not like with an attitude or an effort, anything with that, then that kid needs to hear it from his teammate. They need to hold each other accountable, let them know that that's not acceptable and that cannot happen again. So when our guys got really, when our team got dialed, with all that stuff this spring, is when it stopped coming from me and it started coming from them, and then the problems got fixed real quick. So for them, explaining to them what the difference is between a mental mistake and a physical mistake, and then the difference between how do we react to a physical mistake and a mental mistake. And very simply, a physical mistake, you pick them up. A mental mistake, you call them out and you hold them accountable in a productive manner.
I love you. I got a man crush on you. I couldn't
agree
more.
I appreciate it, man.
You know,
I like having shooters, man. That's nice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you ever seen a high school sophomore drop a pass on purpose? On purpose? No.
I never seen anybody drop a pass on purpose.
Well, I was trying
nobody,
to.
Nobody. Yeah, you know, nobody, I mean, wants
it's
to
crazy.
Screw up, man.
It's crazy. So we tell our kids, and, you know, now that I got this company, the Copperheads, I mean, I got like 12, 14 coaches, you know, that we pay to coach for us. I tell them, man, number one, teach kids to love lacrosse every day. Teach them to pick up ground balls second. Number two, never yell at a kid for dropping a pass or even maybe making a bad pass. He didn't do it on purpose. Now, if we're riding and you're not where you're supposed to be, or we're trapping, we run a trap all over the field on our teams. If we're trapping and you're not where you need to be, or, you know, you're the second slide or the third slide, or you're caught up top and you didn't sag in the hub, man, now you're going to get my full wrath. You know, you're going to get a 62-year-old foot up your ass. But at the end of the day, I agree. I never used the terminology that you use, but we break it up the same way, man. I mean, absolutely, absolutely.
Yep. Attitude and effort are completely within your control every single day. And if you lack on either one of those two, like you said, that foot, it's going to hurt. But the other stuff, you got to lift them up and build them up so that they have confidence to get the next play.
Well, and if you're coaching millennials, you know, and being an author on this subject, you know, obviously the research crosses over. I mean, there's things that I research and see companies are doing, and I'll integrate them into our practices, and then there's things in our practices and I see the players react that we'll come back and do. But, you know, in today's world, I think the day of the autocratic, charismatic leader is gone. You know, I really think you got to build a culture of expectations. And once the culture, the players are holding themselves accountable, even for simple as, you know, showing up on time at a high school practice, You know, those kind of things are huge. And culture trumps individual coaching all the time in my world. You know, you got to build the culture, and that's the reason you need a bunch of players on the same page, not just two or three stars, you know?
Yeah, totally agree.
Hey, man, we're coming up on it. You can help me with one last question. Talk to me about what you may or may not be doing for camps there, Coach, and I want to get them up on the site. I didn't see them directly on the website, but then again, I'm 62 years old. Maybe I didn't see them. Are you doing prospect camps there?
Yeah, I got it. My company is Defiant Lacrosse. It's just defiantlacrosse.com. DefiantLacrosse.com. lacrosse.com. We haven't posted our prospect day for the summer yet, but we'll be having one. Typically, we got one in the fall, we got one in the summer, and then you know, I spend obviously most of the summer just on the road. And for me, I don't leave the island too much, just because we don't need to, and frankly, we shouldn't, in order to protect our backyard with everybody who's, you know, coming in here trying to pick these kids off left and right, as they should be. So yeah, just defiantlacrosse.com, and we'll be posting our summer prospect day pretty soon.
Very cool, man. We will get that posted on the site. And man, I got 4 pages of note here. I can't wait to write up the 5v4GB drill. And I'm gonna call it the 5v4GB drill from Coach Wolf. I won't put a fancy name on it.
Well, you gotta call it. I got it from Coach DeLuca. So wherever he got it from is the.
Oh, now you're pointing your finger, man. That's not like you.
Well, I think it's important to give credit where credit's due. I enjoyed my time with Coach D when I was at Harvard. I learned a lot from him. He's a phenomenal leader and
he's really good
with the X's and O's too. Yeah,
he's really good coach.
He's a really good leader of men beyond coaching. So I love my time with him and wish nothing.
Oh, and he's
going to
do some great things, man. I mean, he's going to do
no
some
doubt.
Great things. You know,
no doubt. But listen, at the end of the day, enough about them and more so about us at LAU, all right?
No. His picture and his name won't be anywhere in here, man. I'm perfectly
That's what I like to
out.
Hear.
Because I sent him an email, and he hasn't come back on, even though one of the most popular drills we have on the entire website, every December we do top 10, we had the most hits during the previous year, because I hate to bother coaches. You know, they're with their families. It's the holidays before the rat race starts. Anyway, Schillinglaw gave us a great drill probably 8 or 9 years ago. It was just a goalie at the, you know, high school age group, you know, unless it's a travel team. Anyway, 2 guys banana cut out. The goalie throws it one way. The other guy redirects. It's a fun way to work. It's a clearing redirect drill that ends up in transition. So the goalie makes a pass out to the banana cut guy. He runs about 10 yards. If it's a better player, we'll have them curl, throw back, redirect off their backhand. The other guy runs about 15 yards. At the midfield line, there's 3 lines, on the sidelines and 1 in the middle. And he bangs it up the sideline because we don't want high school kids clearing through the middle of the field. That never works. And preferably on the non-box side, right? And he throws it up to the wing guy. The wing guy bangs it to the middle, and those 3 come charging down. Well, you know, the 2 poles are out like in Alabama, right? I mean, they're way, way out. They got to get back in. The goalie's got to call them in. And, you know, get in a stack, however you're going to play that. And it's a 3v2 coming back, and then bang, the whistle blows again, 2 guys banana cut. And at the time, you know, we were just starting to do clearing out of transition drills, philosophically, the college coaches were, when we were in, year 3 or 4 of this endeavor. But that's one of my favorites because it's a great way to practice redirect passes, but it's still a transition drill, so I get my rocks off. It's all good.
No doubt. Sounds awesome.
And then I know Tierney runs the same drill with a crease defenseman. So now when you banana cut out, we throw it one way, we redirect the ball over whatever side that crease defenseman now cuts to the ball side of the field. He throws to him. Then he bangs it up the sideline, and we have 4 lines at the midfield line. Now we're 4v3 coming back. But the poles are way, way out. I mean, they got to sprint to get back. And I'm surprised they love the drill as much as they do. If I was a pole, I wouldn't want to run that much. But, you know, it's all good. Anyway, Coach, I want to be respectful of your time. Man, I learned a lot. I just, like I said, I am so aligned in your philosophies. It's really, really cool to talk to somebody that is focusing on how to put the kids in the best position to be successful. And I don't think any of that is acquiescing leadership in any way, shape, or form. I think it's going back to, you know, good to great. It's exactly what the book's about, you know, and it's not about your picture on the cover of the book as much as it is the players feeling empowered and the culture of the team being great.
Yeah,
well, anyway,
no doubt,
we'll get the camps posted. You got to promise to come back at some point. I'm going to try and figure out how to stop this recording. You stay on the line with me for just a second. We go back to the radio voice here, Coach. Hey, Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. Thank you so much to this fantastic Coach Wolf at LIU. Man, remember, we got a tremendous responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it serious every day. Without further ado, this is Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com.